Love Talk Radio.
Lonely like a highway, she's living in a world and it's on fire. Feeling the catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away.
She's an author. Linda, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, hello. Good morning, Russell. Good morning, Radio Land. How's it going?
It's going fantastic. It's an honor to have you on our newsmaker line this morning. And we're looking forward to seeing you at the Christmas in July Thursday at Charlie's. Do not miss Christmas in July. It's going to be a big one. Make sure that you come out and see all the black card holders and the entrepreneurs and the authors, and Linda will be one of the authors. First off, Linda, tell us a little bit about your background and your book.
Well, regarding my background, I was born and raised in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. I'm the only girl in the family. I have five brothers. I enjoyed growing up in Washington, D.C., and I started out in the projects in Barry Farms, but they have always said nothing good can come out of the hood, but that's not true, because my life totally changed when I got involved with the grace of God in the record industry. So I've been involved with the record industry for like over 30 years, and I started in the industry with Al Green. We were like very good friends, and then we started dating, and then he wrote Love and Happiness about our phone conversation, and then eventually he hired me to work for him as his personal secretary, and that's how I basically got into the record industry, and I've been involved since that time.
Excellent, excellent. How was you able to meet Al Green at a young age, and when he was really at the epitome of his record career? I mean, how were you able to cross paths with Al Green?
Actually, you know, it was just God's grace and mercy. I was in a bullied relationship that I really wanted to get out of, and I used to love his song, I'm Tired of Being Alone, so I decided I want to go to the concert to see him. So he was performing at the Lowe's Palace Theater in Washington, D.C. So me and two of my girlfriends, we went to the show that night, and right after the show, we were just standing outside by the Mark IV, just reminiscing about the show, and this guy just stepped off of this tour bus that was parked in front of the building and just walked over and introduced himself to us, and told us that he worked for Al Green, asked us if we wanted to get on the tour bus, see the bus. So we got up on the bus and looked around on the bus. We were like, you know, happy about that. And it's like, wow, we on the tour bus for an artist. And then he asked if we wanted to meet Al Green. So, of course, we wanted to meet Al Green. So he took us backstage, and we got a chance to meet Al. And they invited us to a party that night. But we was like, no, we can't go. We got to go to work the next day. Maybe we can see you all before you check out of the hotel, wherever you all are staying. And fortunately, they were staying at a hotel around the corner from where I was working for the Federal Communications Commission. I was Benjamin Hooks. He was the first black commissioner. I was detailed to work for him as his admin specialist at that time. And so around lunchtime, we went around to the hotel and got a chance to talk with them, and we exchanged telephone numbers, and it just, you know, it went from there. It was just God's grace and mercy.
Wow. When it comes to the record promotion business, how did you quasi your life into promotion of records?
Now, what happened was after I, you know, left Al Green, traveling with him on the road, and came back to D.C., got a grant to go to American University. I did that, and while I was there, there was an internship in the music library at WKYS radio station, and Donnie Simpson was the program director. So I went there for the internship, and he did, you know, an interview with him. So he said, okay, I'll give you an opportunity to work in the music library because I was going to get a credit for a class. So that was like a class for me, the internship. And while I was there, you know, the promotion men, they were coming in and they were telling Donnie, you know, I need this record played. The record is played here, there, and everywhere. This is what we can give the station, giveaways. You know, if you play the record, we can bring the artists in so the artists can do interviews and special promotions for the radio station. Whatever the station needs, you know, we can do. And so I was listening to this bill when they came in. So I said to myself, I think I can do that. So the more I listened, the more I learned. And one day I found out that Jack the Rapper was having a convention in Miami, Florida. So I said to myself, I'm going to go there. So I booked my reservations. I went to Miami, Florida, and I was at one of the panel sessions. They had a promotions panel, and they were all men. So they had a Q&A session right after they got finished, you know, giving their spiel on the panel. And I wanted to know why they didn't have, like, really like a lot of women promotion reps because I hadn't seen any before. So nobody answered my question. So later on, I was just sitting out in the lobby of the hotel, and this guy came up to me and said, so you want to be a record promoter, huh? I said, yes, I do. So he introduced himself, and it was Joe Medlin. Joe Medlin was like a pioneer in the record industry. I mean, everybody knew Joe Medlin. So I talked to Joe. He gave me a few tips. So he says, you should call Roy Ayers. Roy Ayers has his own record company. Maybe he'll give you an opportunity to be the promotion rep, you know, in the D.C. market for him. So I followed through. I called Roy. Of course, Joe had called him as well. And Roy Ayers gave me an opportunity to work his record, and it spiraled from there. I worked for him for a couple of years. Then Schwartz Brothers, a big record distributor, they hired me to work for them. And that's when I got a chance to get involved in hip-hop.
So when we're going to take a break. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want you to expand on hip-hop because hip-hop came into the record market, sort of blindsided everybody. And how did you have that vision to even get involved with hip-hop when hip-hop was not something desirable for people in the record business to get involved in? We're on our newsmaker line. Linda, well, this is the Russell Price Morning Show. It's all about you. We'll be right back.
Harder than a fantasy. Lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire. Feeling the catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away. Oh, she got those feet on the ground and she's burning it down. Oh,
She's on fire. Linda is on fire. She's from the Washington, D.C. area, homegrown, and she's a record promoter. She's been involved with some of the heavyweights in the record industry. But how did you see the vision of hip-hop before hip-hop became a visionary aspect of music today? Most people in the record industry didn't see hip-hop coming. You got involved with hip-hop. What drove you to that point, and how did you get that vision in your head to even get involved?
Well, I was working for a record distributor, Schwartz Brothers, and Schwartz Brothers was distributing records for all the small independent record companies. When I say distributor, they were putting the artists' music records in stores in the Mid-Atlantic region. So if you had a record, you didn't have a distribution deal, you come to Schwartz Brothers. If I was going to promote your product, I had to like the product before the buying department decided to take the product in. So that just happened by default. It wasn't something that I did on my own, but Schwartz Brothers was distributing for the smaller labels. And so when they came to Schwartz, it was my responsibility to take that product out there and go to the radio stations and get it played. And I did believe in that music. I mean, the Dougie Fresh, you know, with Lottie Dottie, and the show, which was a two-sided record. At that time, there weren't CDs. These were records, an A-side and a B-side 45. So I was working Dougie's record. Then here comes Salt and Pepper. I was working Salt and Pepper. Then here comes EPMD. And all this good rap music, which was called hip-hop, was great music. I mean, I understood the music. So, because I like go-go music, so if you like go-go music, you can deal with any other kind of, like, that urban type of sound. So I was one of the first promotion people who was able to go out there and work that product at the radio stations, and I'm good at what I do. If I put my mind to do something, I can do it. And like I also said, the product was good as well. I understood it. So it was just like a baby being birthed. I was like the carrier, and I took that product out there, and I worked it at radio stations, and I worked it at stores. I did in stores. I had the artists come in town so, you know, the people can meet the artists. And, I was working the clubs. I was taking the records to the clubs, getting the DJs to, you know, play the record, buying them drinks. I mean, whatever I had to do, you know, to get the fire started is what I did. And it worked, and it caught on, and it started catching on in other parts of the country, because we had another promotion rep. He was working a product from New Jersey. We had another rep that was down in the Carolinas. And so, you know, people were working in different markets, and it just came together. And, you know, hip-hop is big, especially the old-school classic hip-hop. So...
Excellent.
And I have a couple of gold records as well.
Something that's so profound, and you talked about record distributors. A lot of people don't know even what a record distributor is. And it brought back memories, because I was in the record business in Philadelphia. We had record stores. And what you say was absolutely correct. You had to have a record distributor buy the record from the distributor, and then they put it in the record shops. What do you think about the way music is distributed? How is music distributed today? Tell us the difference between back then and now today about record distribution. How does the artist get his record out there? There's no longer someone to take it by the station and get the DJ to play. How does it work today?
Well, you know, they still have a few promotion reps that go into the radio stations to take the record. But for the most part, you know, artists just put his do us a little video and put the video up on YouTube, you know. And for distribution, they doing it the same way. You know, if they get enough hits on YouTube, they might get a major record company that will pick that group up, and then that major record company, they have their own distribution network that's set up. And I believe there's still a couple of independent distributors out there, but it's like underground. You really have to know who these underground distributors are. But for the most part, it's much different than what it was when I was in the game. I think when I was in the game, it was better, because you had record stores to go to. We can take our own product to the record store. Nowadays, you don't have the record stores like you used to. You have to go online and buy the music. And it was much more personal when I was in the game than it is now. I think they had a better chance then because you can go to the record store and you can do your in-stores and you can meet and greet the public. It's not like that anymore because they have few record stores. Everything is impersonal, it's mechanical, and it's online. So if you don't put a video up there, you just have to run around in your own township and in other townships and go to the clubs and pass out, you know, your product in the street. But it's
that's
a totally different
correct.
Thing.
No more record stores. Record stores were a pillar in the African American community. You couldn't be in the community without having a record store. I remember when we were selling records, you had to buy that record every week. People would buy 45 rather than buy a loaf of bread. They had
right.
to have that 45.
Right.
Today, there is no record stores. You can't walk into a record store and say, play this song for me, or walk by a record store and hear the music blasting outside the record store that drives you to come inside the record store. And all the 45s are lined up and the LPs are lined up when you go through it. Everything is electronic. What do you think about American Idol and the way it changed the game as far as making record promotion or making record guests or people who would become stars? Is that a good way of doing it now through American Idol type format?
Well, you know, actually, you know, Ed Sullivan's show, you know, they had a lot of shows prior to the American Idol, you know, and that's where they got a lot of different artists from those type of TV talent shows. I think American Idol is a good barometer because it gives everybody that gets in line an opportunity, you know, to present themselves. So I think that's very good. And I want to add to this, we went from the 45s and LPs to CDs. I was working product that was on CDs, you know what I'm saying? So we didn't stay, like, you know, in the vinyl age. But, yeah, they had talent shows back in the day. So I think American Idol, the other show, America's Got Talent, I think all of those different shows, it's a good outlet. It really is.
Excellent, excellent. We're going to take another break. When we come back, I want you to expand on the book. What inspired the book? What's the book about? And how can we get the book? We're on our Newsmaker line with Linda Willis. She is extraordinary entrepreneur, author, record promoter. Her background is extensive, and we are fortunate to have her on our Newsmaker line. This is the Russell Price Morning Show. It's networking on the radio. It's all about you. Promotions for stars. She has made records become large just through her exposure of this record through record stations and radio stations, etc. Now she's going to be there at the Christmas in July at Charlie, 7303 Georgia Avenue, Northwest, on Thursday night. Come out from 6 to 10. Get a copy of her book. Meet her in person, up close and personal. Linda, tell us about the book, the inspiration for the book, and what is the book about?
Well, I was inspired to write the book because I feel like my life has been interesting and it's been a little different from the norm. And from the experiences that I've had in my life, I felt that I wanted to share it, my experiences with other people, and also let them know about God's grace and mercy, because even though you could be going through, you having a hard time, you don't know which way to turn, what's up, what's down. But if you just keep things in prayer, and if you have like a desire in your heart to move forward and do something big and major in your life, you can always do it. So I want to inspire people and let them know whatever you're going through, you know, it's not who you are now, it's what you can become if you just stay steadfast and unremovable. And about the record industry, I wanted to teach some of the young people about record promotions to give them some history of the music industry, because there are a lot of people that's out there that's interested in getting in the game. But before you get in the game, you need to know something about the game. So I thought I wanted to teach. So if you read the book, it will teach you how to be a record promoter. It will teach you how to go through ups and downs and come out of it. I've also worked with people like Teddy Pendergrass. Teddy Pendergrass and I worked with Teddy, and we were friends for like over 30-some years. And I was able to encourage him from some of the things that I went through that was encouraging to him, and like he was a superstar. But, you know, you can never be too big. You can never be too small to be able to learn something from somebody else. So I've always wanted to do something for the masses of people. I can't sing, I can't write, I can't draw. I mean, I can write, I mean, I can't draw, I can't sing or play an instrument. So I want to share my experiences with the world in hope of encouraging somebody else's life.
When you worked with Teddy Pendergrass, was he the walking Teddy Pendergrass or the wheelchair Teddy Pendergrass?
Both. Both. I met Teddy Pendergrass in 1976 when Teddy was walking.
Wow, so you knew him through both. He's from my hometown, which is Philadelphia, and he was extremely large, larger than life when he was singing in the 70s, and he was such a perseverance individual where he kept on singing to the day he died. How did you meet Teddy Pendergrass?
Actually, I met Teddy at a show in Washington, D.C. It was at the Warner Theater. He was there, and I went to the show that night and went in the dressing room and introduced myself. And that night, they were having a party. It seemed like the artists always have after parties after the show. And so his road manager invited me to come by the hotel to Teddy's room to the party. So I said, okay, I think I'll drop by. You know, I have a little time. It's not too late. So I went past the hotel, and I went up to Teddy's room to the party, but it was a far cry from a party because nobody was in the room but Ted. So I'm like, well, maybe I shouldn't be. He was like, no, 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 let's sit down, let's talk. You know, people are going to come after a while. So we got a chance to sit down and talk, and I told him that I had worked for, you know, for Al Green and what I did for Al on the road. And he says, you know what, I just left Harold Melvin, and the Blue Notes are with me, and I'm looking for a road secretary. Teddy wanted to hire me, like, right there on the spot. So we talked about it, but I told him I didn't want to leave another government job to go back out there and work on the road, but I can only do it on the weekends. He said, that's fine, because the weekend is the only time I'm working right now until I get a record deal. I said, okay, cool. So Teddy and I partnered up. A couple weeks later, I showed up in Philadelphia, and I started working for him as his road secretary. And even after I stopped working for him, our friendship remained for 30-some years. I've known Teddy for like over 33 years.
Excellent, excellent. So you really have connected with some of the heavyweights in the record business. I mean, heavyweights, movers,
Smokey Robinson,
people who
Johnny Taylor, you name them, because I also work for a major label, SBK Records. I got a chance to work with Smokey Robinson, Vanilla Ice, the first white rapper. I mean, I've worked with so many people. I mean, the Bronner Brothers, Holland, the two Holland brothers, Bobby Womack, Clarence Carter. I work R&B music. I work gospel music. I worked a little bit of pop music. I was working anything that was given to me, go-go music. I could go to the radio stations and work it. So there's a repertoire of superstars that I've worked with behind the scenes to help them become superstars and to help to make their records famous records, like Jocelyn Brown. She was a one-hit wonder, but Somebody Else's Guy was a big record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a big record. Yeah, because
it's a big record.
Somebody Else's Guy. I mean, she hit a chord that people wanted to hear from. Those old types, soul classics were old back in the day, but people related to them because they were such a sign of times now, those type of songs. But now today, music is a little bit different. You have to... Is it hard? What's your opinion of the records of today? Is it hard to comprehend records that are hard to understand, or is it based on just the beat, or does a lyric type record still stand today?
Well, you know, it's for the most part for the older people, it's just the beats, because a lot of the lyrics are just not, you know. I would say that it's just not good, tasteful. The words aren't tasteful when they use the word B and hoes and guns and the video showing all of this violence. The message in the it's always in the music, and the message that's in this music is just damnation, you know, to these kids, because they don't realize the subliminal messages are going into their conscious and subconscious mind, and they start acting out what they're singing. You know, it's a dangerous thing. People don't realize everything you touch, see, smell, taste, and hear becomes a part of what you do. And that subliminal message is not good for these young people nowadays. It's not good.
That's so true. It went from gangster rap to rap and the negative words and the connotations, but it's still going strong today. The hip-hop rap music is not going anywhere. It's been through different genders or different stages, but it's still going strong. When's it going to stop? It may never stop. It may be the future of music for people who are growing up, or people who are coming into the world. But we had classics back in the day. We had the Smokey Robinsons and the Holland Doja and Holland. And you had these writers that wrote music that people could really, you know, relate to. You know, nowadays it's a different situation. A guy writes his own lyrics. He's a rapper. He's not an artist. He's not a singer. He's a rapper. That takes the singing out of it altogether. You're not a singer. You're a rapper. So they'd say, What are you singing? I mean, the Frank Sinatra's. If you take somebody like a Tony Bennett, who's 80 years old, and he's keeping the singing alive. Singing a lot. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, that's somebody that's really still in the game today, but he was in the game yesterday, and that's hard to do. We're going to come back with some closing statements. Go ahead.
When the Federal Communications Commission deregulated radio, that's when all this hardcore rap music came out, because it was kind of out there in the streets, but because they regulated radio, you couldn't play it. But now that there's deregulation, then, you know, Pandora's box has been opened, and everything is out there nowadays. It's just the way of the world now.
Wow. I'm going to come back with some closing statements. This is the Russell Price Morning Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Linda, it's been a pleasure and an honor. We've learned so much about the record promotional business and also about the dynamic life of you. Give us some closing statements.
Okay, I would like to just thank everybody for listening to the interview. I would like to see everybody up by Charlie's on Thursday. I'll be there from like 7 until 9 o'clock. And you can buy my record online. I mean, not record, but you can buy my book online on Amazon, or you can get it from Barnes & Noble, or you can go to my website, thegreatrecordpromoter.com. That's my website, and you can get a lot of information about me. And if you want to get in contact with me, you can also put your information in on my website blog, and I will get back in contact with you. I'd like to say thank you, Washington, D.C., the DMV, and the surrounding areas. Hope I'll get to meet and greet with you soon. And above all, thank you, Russell, for having me.
Excellent, excellent. It was a pleasure and an honor. You are definitely a woman on fire. You're somebody who's going places, who's making things happen. I've watched you over the years. You are what they call an enforcer, a person who is a go-getter, a head-turner, neck-breaker, a traffic stopper, someone who can make things happen. And we're looking forward to seeing you on Thursday. Spread the word. Don't miss this one. It's going to be an opportunity for you to network at its best. Christmas in July. This is the Russell Price Morning Show. Every morning from 10 to 10:30, we'll be back here, right? Same place, same time tomorrow morning.
Oh.